durability. And also speak about the deteriorated reinforced concrete structure. So to this aim, we need to know what is the deterioration mechanism. And in the second part, we should know what is the effect of each deterioration process. For example, if we speak about the corrosion, in the first part, we should know what is the mechanism, how corrosion happens in the structure, and which type of the corrosion we have in the structure. And in the second part, we should see and know if we have a corroded structure, what is the effect of the corrosion? Does it have any effect on compressive stress of concrete, yield strength of the rebar, or bond slip between the rebar? So we divided the presentation in two parts. In the first part, we will speak about the deterioration mechanism, not for all type of the deterioration, but for majority of them. And then in the second part, which probably would be tomorrow, or maybe we could start it today in the next part, we can speak about the effect of each deterioration and see the structural effect of this problem. So let's start with the quick review, very quick review of the last session we had. We speak about the concrete structure, and we told that we have a different type of the structures. When we are going to use the concrete as a material, then we could speak about the dam, bridge, pipelines, many infrastructures, like, for example, power stations and different type of the structure. But it is very important to know that when we are going to design this type of the structure, the aim of the design is safety. So when we speak about the design, safety is very important factor. Sorry, there's some problem. Safety is a very important factor in this type of the structure. So, and when we speak about the safety, there is two options we should take into account in our calculation. First one could be a load and forces, which could be dynamic forces or static forces, different type of the forces, and the structure could be overloaded sometimes. And the other is an environmental condition. Which last session we speak that if we have a different type of the environmental condition, we could divide it in different level. Each one could be, for example, if you remember from the table we had, we divided the exposure class to different type and different level. For example, for corrosion, if we don't have a corrosion, we say that it's X0. If we have a carbonation or if we have a chloride corrosion, then the name and level would be different. And also for freeze thaw and sulfate attack and everything. So what's the advantage of this method? In this method, if we know, for example, we have an existing structure and we know the environmental condition, we can select which type of the concrete we could select based on the durability, M90, M60, and in addition, we could select the rebar cover and concrete cover on the rebar. So it's help us to have a safe structure even in a very severe condition. So in the last session, we learned that how to divide the structure, and based on this division, how we can select the durability class and cover depth. So today, we are going to, in addition, last session, We speak about the WC water cement ratio and impact of the water cement ratio in the quality of the concrete. Then I'm going to a little continue speak about the water cement ratio and effect of the WC on the concrete. I also need to speak more about the expiration durability, and we need to know what is the durability. Based on the American Concrete Institute, we can say that durability of concrete is its ability to resist withering actions, chemical attack, abrasion, and other process of deterioration. So when we say that we have a durable concrete, it means that we have a concrete which is strong enough to resist against different type of the deterioration and attack. So, and last session we learn how we can select the different classification of durable concrete. So today we are going to speak about the deterioration and process of the deterioration. And if we be familiar with the deterioration, then it make us able to find the different class and know the concept of each, and based on that we can use the different method to assess the structures, assess the residual capacity of the structures. So let's speak about the impact of the water cement ratio on durability. We know that for a durable concrete, you use the lowest ratio of water cement could help us to have an impermeable concrete. It means that if we reduce the water cement ratio, we have a stronger and more compact concrete, and the permeability of concrete will reduce. And in addition, permeability is the contributory factor for volume change, and and higher WC ratio is main cause of higher permeability. So if you want to reduce the permeability of the concrete, there is a direct line between the WC ratio and the amount of the permeability. And if you remember last session, we little speak about the plasticizer and superplasticizer. Superplasticizer could help us to increase the workability of the concrete, to have a more flowable concrete, at the same time with low ratio of the water cement. So the advantage of using the superplasticizer is we can reduce the WC ratio, and at the same time we can, by reducing the WC ratio, we can also reduce the permeability. And permeability is a very important factor in the durability of the concrete. So when we speak about the durable concrete, it's very favorable for us to have an impermeable concrete. So let's look at the short clip about the superplasticizer and the effect of the plasticizer on the cement and how it behaves on the cement.
Question. After water, what is the most widely used product in the world? Concrete. Did you know that concrete is a whole science in itself, and one in which dozens of scientists are involved every day at the Lafarge Research Center? Buildings. For a long time, our limited knowledge of concrete meant that we had to erect standard buildings with straight lines to ensure a solid structure. Question. After water, what is the most widely used product in the world? Concrete. Did you know that concrete is a whole science in itself, and one in which dozens of scientists are involved every day at the Lafarge Research Center? Buildings. For a long time, our limited knowledge of concrete meant that we had to erect standard buildings with straight lines to ensure a solid structure. Our Our research into the chemistry of concrete has enabled us to design a more pliable and sturdy type of concrete, allowing more daringly shaped and more spectacular buildings to be built. To achieve this, we studied the very nature of concrete, analyzing it on a microscopic scale. Fresh, standard concrete meets all durability and solidity requirements, but it is often extremely hard and viscous and difficult to work with. A natural chemical phenomenon lies at the root of this problem. Cement particles in concrete are irresistibly drawn towards each other when mixed with water. To produce concrete with greater fluidity without adding water, Lafarge's scientists have developed their own technology on dispersant additives, commonly known as superplasticizers. A dispersant is a molecule that physically separates the cement particles. These molecules temporarily neutralize the forces of attraction between the cement particles, and this gives the concrete a much more liquid consistency. By taking a closer look, we can see that superplasticizer molecules are made up of long chains and links. The superplasticizer attaches itself to the cement particles in what is known as the adsorption phase. The quality of the raw materials used to make the cement can hinder this adsorption process. The latest generation of superplasticizers takes these cement variations into account. Its more powerful linking system rapidly covers all the particles, regardless of their type. After this, each element has a role to play. The chains, which are also longer, separate the particles and fluidize the mixture. This is known as steric repulsion. On reaction with water, crystals form on the cement particles, cancelling out the superplasticizer's separating effect. To keep concrete in a liquid state for over 2 hours, Lafarge's scientists can control this natural crystallization phenomenon by adjusting the molecule's geometry and response speed. The science of additives therefore opens up greater opportunities for architects who, thanks to more pliable, solid and longer-lasting concrete, can think up more sophisticated designs and build ever more ambitious structures which meet their increasingly imaginative design requirements.
Okay, so you can see that using the plasticizer could help us to have a flow concrete, and at the same time we can reduce the amount of the water and increase the strength and increase the durability. Let's speak more about the permeability of the concrete and cement paste. In this graph you can see that the effect of the water-cement ratio on a coefficient of permeability. Then when we increase the water-cement ratio, as we expect, then we have more permeability factors in cement. For example, we could say that after 55% water-cement ratio, there is a sudden increase in the permeability. So this is the reason we say that if we would like to have the lowest permeability, we would like to reduce the water-cement ratio. And increasing the water-cement ratio from 4% to 6% will increase the permeability a lot. So, in this graph, we can see the degree of the hydration against coefficient of permeability. I think this is for WC ratio, 70% water-cement ratio. And you can see that increasing the age of the concrete or cement paste reduces the permeability. But there is, again, after 28 days, or if you continue this graph, remain some permeability coefficient on their structures. And it's not possible to make the permeability of the concrete equal to zero because it's very difficult. Always we have some pores in the structures. So in this slide, we can see that the effect of the water-cement ratio, if we have a low water-cement ratio in the schematic model, we can see the porous structures in the cement paste. When we have a water-cement ratio, higher water-cement ratio and lower water-cement ratio. In higher water-cement ratio, we have a high permeability as we expected. And in the lower, we have a low permeability. But the reason, if we look at the porous structures, we can see that when we have a high ratio of W cement, the pores are interconnected by each other. All of the pores are connected. And CSH gel, which is responsible for increasing the characteristic like compressive strength of the concrete, connected by some capillary pores. Our capillary pores are connected to each other. But when we have a lower WC water cement ratio, the capillary pores segmented and in some part are connected to each other. And this is the reason, this is why we have a high permeability or we have a lower permeability when we have a different WC ratio. So its influence on the structure and interconnection of the capillary pores. And when the capillary pores are connected to each other, then the permeability will increase. We have a higher permeability. Here, we can see the degree of hydration, effect of degree of hydration on capillary pores when we have a different water-cement ratio. Here is the water-cement ratio is 20% and it's increased to 80%. For the case, for example, select one case here. For the case, WC ratio is 40%, 0.54 for this line. You can see that after completely hydration, degree of the hydration is around 95% after curing, and we don't have a 100% hydration. But after curing with 95% hydration, the capillary pores, the volume of the capillary pores is around 10% or maybe around 8%. The exact value is 8.3%. And when we select the different line with higher WC ratio, and the WC ratio in the blue line is 0.6, you can see that the degree of hydration is complete and is 100% after end of the curing. And the capillary pores increase to 26%. So we increase the water cement ratio from 0.4, the red line, to 0.6, the blue line. And it leads to increase the capillary pores at the end of the curing. But we should know that when WC ratio is not high, and it's 0.4 at least, lower than this, the hydration is not complete and we have a 95% hydration. Increasing capillary pores cause a much larger increase in permeability. And the reason of the increasing in permeability, if you remember the previous slide, is connection between the pores. So when we have a higher water cement ratio, we have a more interconnected pores, and then it's increased the permeability of the concrete. Any questions so far? regarding to permeability, durability, and so here I'm going to a little change the direction and speak about the effect of the fire on the concrete. We know that we could have a different type of the fire in the concrete structures. And when we speak about the fresh concrete or hardened concrete, the effect of the fire could be different. During the extensive heating, concrete undergoes a series of chemical and physical processes. The pore water, as we expected, when we increase the heat, the water in the pores starts to evaporate. And the water, the pores which are close to the surface of the concrete, start to evaporate. And the pore water in the gel pores then migrate from capillary pores to the capillary pores. And then again, that water starts to evaporate. So we have two evaporation processes. First, the water in the surface, in the capillary pores in the surface, start to evaporate. And then after continuing the increasing the temperature, the pores, the gel pores, the water in the gel pores try to move to the capillary pores to fill the capillary pores, and again they start to evaporate. So the major effect so far, the majority effect of the fire is evaporation of the water. And the evaporation continue up to 105 degrees. And at this time, all pore water will evaporate after sufficient exposure time. So we increase the temperature to 105, and then the water in the pores start to evaporate it. And after increasing the temperature more than 105 or around 105, then the dehydration of the CSH gel will be start. And it will continue to 850 degree. And the CSH gel completely dehydrated. So it's not favorable for us because, as I said, CSH gel is responsible for characteristic, the majority of the characteristic of the concrete. And if we lose the CSH gel in our concrete, then the concrete lose their important characteristics. Then we can say that concrete undergoes drying float by decomposition of the hydration product. And the structure, the gel structure, start to decomposite. And we know that it's clear that increasing the temperature leads to losing the weight of the concrete because we have a several evaporation process. When we increase the temperature in the concrete, we have a cement paste, and in the cement paste we have a thermal shrinkage. So cement paste try to shrink due to the temperature. And in the aggregate we have an expansion. And this incompatibility between the thermal strength for the cement and aggregate, which one of them leads to be increased and the other leads to want to shrink, then this leads to having the cracking due to the heating in the concrete. So the main reason of the cracking due to the fire in the structure is a incompatibility between the strain, which in the cement paste it would like to shrink, and in the aggregate it would like to expand and have a larger strain. And this leads to have a crack around the aggregate in the cement paste. So this graph is very interesting graph. In the horizontal line, it could be depth from the surface of the concrete, and it's increased around 20 millimeters. And in this line, we have a temperature. And this is the time of adding the heat to the concrete. It's clear that in the surface of the concrete, we have a high temperature. But when we go through the concrete, 20 centimeters, the temperature, the change in the temperature is very low. It shows us that the concrete as a material, the thermal diffusivity in the concrete is very low. The heat propagation from the fire exposed surface is slow, and high thermal gradient will occur during the exposure. So another reason of the cracking is different between the temperature in the surface and when we go deeper in the concrete. So we have a big difference between the temperature. So here we have a short clip of the effect of the fire on the structure. When we apply the fire to the concrete, then we will have some crack. And after having the crack, we have some spalling on the surface, concrete removed from the surface, because we have some internal crack. And also, when we have at the same time, for example, assume that we have a beam or we have a column and we have a load on the structure, and then we have a fire in the structure. In this case, suddenly we have the explosion in the concrete, because we will have a brittle failure in the concrete, because concrete cannot resist anymore the loads. So,
what shall explode as in the
I will describe it just.
Yes. Maybe we can draw it.
Yeah, it's a little. Yeah. I will describe to you soon.
High temperature environments and applications pose unique performance challenges for structural concrete. Traditional Portland cement.
You know, when we have a load in the structure, we design the structure to rebar start to be yield, and then concrete start to suffer the load and then explode. This is the flexural failure. Not if we have a very strong concrete and very strong rebar, we are not sure that the rebar will yield before concrete explode. If I want to draw for you, we have a load deflection curve for rebar. Here is the Fy. Also, we have a stress strain curve for the concrete. And here is a steel. The design is based on that if I have a concrete beam, if I apply the load, I would like at first I have some yielding in the rebar, and here is the FC, compressive strength of the concrete. First I have this, and then concrete start to reach FC and fail. This is a flexural failure. But when I apply the heat to the concrete, then the FC will reduce, because I have several crack in the concrete. Yeah. And then I have a crack here and reduced FC. And before reaching the yield stress, suddenly concrete start to fail and rebar remain completely without any hinge or any plastic zone on that. And it's not favorable for us, because we put the rebar to use the capacity of the rebar and then use the concrete capacity. So in this clip, we can see the effect of the heat.
High temperature environments and applications pose unique performance challenges for structural concrete. Traditional Portland cement concrete is principally comprised of a calcium silicate hydrate gel that begins to dehydrate and break down when exposed to temperatures above 212 degrees Fahrenheit. Free calcium hydroxide in Portland cement concrete loses its bound water at approximately 900 degrees Fahrenheit, leaving calcium oxide. When re-exposed to moisture, it rehydrates and expands, compromising the structural integrity and durability of the concrete. Deterioration of Portland cement concrete can begin in temperatures as low as 150 degrees Fahrenheit, as its low thermal conductivity and low heat capacity cause differing amounts of expansion and associated destructive tensile forces within the concrete matrix. This action results in progressive strength loss and ultimately mechanical failure as the concrete undergoes thermal cycling. As temperatures climb past the boiling point of 212 degrees Fahrenheit, dehydration of the calcium silicate hydrate gel begins to take place, weakening the hydrate structure. Free water within the concrete also converts to steam and causes surface spalling. Ceratex Fire Rock Cement Concrete has been engineered to produce a concrete with superior durability in environments subject to frequent thermal cycling and high temperatures. Fire Rock can withstand intermittent temperatures as high as 1,850 degrees Fahrenheit and sustain temperatures up to 570 degrees Fahrenheit without significant loss of strength. Fire Rock produces an extremely dense concrete with high thermal diffusivity rates to enable it to withstand high intermittent thermal loading. Its spherical cement particles also reduce yield stress and viscosity during mixing and allow for low water-to-cement ratio mix designs. The majority of mixed water is consumed in the hydration process, leaving negligible free water to facilitate steam spalling. Ceratex Fire Rock Cement Concrete has over twice the heat capacity and five times the thermal conductivity of Portland cement concrete. Fire Rock dissipates heat rapidly, reducing its susceptibility to cracking and spalling due to thermal stresses. These attributes, combined with a unique cement chemistry that lacks calcium hydrates and hydroxides, produces a durable concrete with the characteristics to endure high temperature environments. Finite element analysis comparisons of 6 foot by 6 foot by 12 inch deep Fire Rock cement concrete and Portland cement concrete slabs subjected to 60 second cycles of convective heat at 1000 degrees Fahrenheit show that Fire Rock absorbed significantly less heat and experienced lower tensile stresses than the equivalent volume of Portland cement concrete under equal thermal loading. Ceratex High Performance Fire Rock has demonstrated superior durability in a wide variety of applications. After extensive testing and field evaluation, Fire Rock has been specified by the U.S. Department of Defense for thermally demanding vertical takeoff and landing pads, as well as ramp areas subject to the damaging effects of exhaust from aircraft auxiliary power units. Other applications include metal foundries, molten mineral processing, natural gas installations, food processing areas, oven bases, and similar high thermal cycling and high heat environments. Realize reduced operational downtime, lower maintenance costs, and extended infrastructure service life by 3 to 4 times by specifying Ceratex Ultra Durable Fire Rock for your next project. For more information, contact a Ceratex representative today.
Okay, so when we are going to evaluate or assess the structures which is suffer from the heat or some fire problem, one of the method is using the finite element simulation. In the finite element method, we try to simulate the structure. This structure could be part of the structure or it could be a whole structure. And then after simulating the structure, we try to define the behavior of the material, steel, concrete, or different type of the material. And finite element concept is like that. We divided the structure to small element, very, very small element, which we name it mesh. And in each mesh, we could calculate the stress and strain. If I have a column like this, then I can say that I could divide the column with small element, and it could be 3D dimensional, not only 2D. And then for each element, small element, I can find the strain and stress for the concrete, for the rebar, and understand, for example, after applying the fire in some part of the structure, what's happened for whole structure, for the capacity of the structure. So one of the useful method is using the finite element, if it's not possible to use the experimental. But experimental data will help us to simulate the structure more accurate, because we need some information. For example, if I increase the temperature to, I don't know, for example, 500 degree, what's happened for compressive stress of concrete? How much is reduced? So we need, for not only for fire, for all type of the deterioration, we need to know the effect of the material effect of the deterioration process on the structures. So in this part, I'm going to start to speak about the deterioration, and we divided the deterioration in three different types. And then for each type, we have a different type of the deterioration. We can divide the deterioration of concrete in mechanical and physical deterioration, chemical, and also reinforcement corrosion. So in the mechanical, we have a different type of the deterioration. I select some of them. It's frost, could be freeze and thaw, overloading, abrasion, and erosion. And for chemical, it could be leaching, ASR or alkali-silica reaction, and sulfate attack. And for reinforcement, we have two different type of the corrosion, chloride corrosion and carbonation. I would like to say that there are several other type of the deterioration, which in some cases could be important, in some cases wouldn't be important. But due to the time, we select some of them, and we will discuss here about this deterioration process. And we already learned about the permeability of the concrete. And the permeability is a very important parameter in durability of the structures. So for many of them, if we would like to control the deterioration, we need to reduce the permeability of the concrete. So let's start with frost damage. Frost damage, we already have some water in the concrete, and we have some pores in the concrete. Hardened concrete, the percentage of the pores in the hardened concrete is around 12 to 80%. And the pores usually filled with water, because we add the water for the hydration, we need the water. And sometimes all of the water is not participating in the hydration process. So we need some water in the pores. And when we reduce the temperature, the water in the pores would like to increase the volume. And this increasing in the volume is around 9%. And it's clear, if we have a increased volume in the small pore, then it creates a crack in the concrete. So after increasing the volume, damage occurs in the structures. So this volume increase create a tensile force in the pores. So if I have a pores like this in the matrix, and then I have a water on that, and water would like to increase the volume, and then I have some tensile force on each pores, and the tensile force in the concrete and in the cement paste is the main reason of cracking. So everywhere we know that the concrete is not strong enough to resist the tensile force. And the main reason we add the rebar to the concrete is rebar could suffer the tensile forces. But concrete is strong in the compressive force. And when we have a tensile force in the concrete, then we will have some crack. And one of the reason to control the frost and make the frost resistant concrete is reducing the water cement ratio. We learned that reducing the water cement ratio, which will leads to reducing the permeability of the concrete and the percentage of the pores. If you remember, we had a graph, and with the higher WC ratio, we had a higher pores percentage, and by reducing that, we could reduce the capillary pores. And if we reduce that, then we have less water in the pores, and then and also we reduce the WC. It means that we reduce the amount of the water, and we have less water in the concrete, and then we could say that the concrete is could be resistant against frost. For example, we have two different cases here. For one of them, water cement ratio is 40%, for the other is 70%. And for a lower water cement ratio, about 10% of water will freeze after minus 20 centigrade degree. But for higher one, it's the percentage, and the percentage of the water is 30%, which freeze at the minus 20 degree. So it shows us again, water cement ratio could be the key factor even for controlling the concrete against frost. So I can stop it here, and then you can have a break, and then we can continue after. Okay, let's continue with frost. So we understand that there is a water within the pores of concrete, and after reducing the temperature, they try to expand, and this expansion creates a tensile force, and this tensile force along the cement paste causing the crack and scalding of the concrete. And also there is one factor that if we so far we understand that if we want to control the spalling, control the concrete against the frost, we need to reduce the water cement ratio. And there is another method to control the frost is adding the bubble or air entraining the concrete. Why this adding the bubble will help the concrete? In the next slide, we will speak about this. So, before going through the effect of the bubble in the concrete, we should know that the frost deterioration of concrete in practice usually happens with salt. Salt due to the seawater, salt due to the de-icer and the surface of the concrete and the slabs, and the existing of the salts leads to surface scaling, and the combination of the salt and freeze problem could lead to spalling of the surface and concrete. But there is another process. Usually when we speak about the freeze, there is a freeze and thaw situation. It means that it's getting cold and freezing, and then the temperature increase. And the disadvantage of this is the salt could come by water to the concrete, and the water could come out and the salt remain in the concrete. And then in the next cycle of the freeze and thaw process, it's become worse and worse because we have more salt in the concrete, and then we have a freeze. So we should pay attention that when we speak about the frost, always or the often we have a problem with salt as well. And the other point I should speak about, that the maximum damage, as we spoke it last week, happened when there is a direct contact of water to the surface of the concrete. And at that time, because the direct contact could remove the cover and then make concrete more permeable, and the salt and other problem could go through the concrete, and by freezing on top problem, it will extend it, and then we have much more problem in the concrete. So if we want to control the or know the main reason of the main factor which could control the freeze problem is pore structures and degree of saturation of pores. So the first one, how pores distributed along the concrete, because we know that in the pores there is a water, and this water leads to cracking. So the first one is pore structures, and the second parameter is degree of saturation, how much water is in the pores. So if you have a fully saturated pores, then by increasing the volume quickly leads to cracking. But if it's semi-saturated, or it's not filled completely with water, then there is a place for increasing the volume. Okay. Here, I mentioned that one of the method to control the freeze and thaw problem is adding the air bubble. In this graph, it showed the effect of the air content and against the durability factor. So you can see that when we increase the number of the bubble or air pores in the concrete, then suddenly the durability go up, durability factor, and it means that we have a good durability. You can see here, when the bubbles is more than around 4%, then we are in the good durability situation. But when the pores or air content is less than 3 or less than 2, we are in a poor durability condition. So, as I said, the percentage of the air content could influence on the durability of the structures. But it is important to know that the percentage of the durability, if we increase it a lot, then its influence on the compressive strength of the concrete and will reduce that. So we are not allowed to increase the air content as much as we can. So there is a limitation for that. So if we look at the distribution of pores in the structures, and the total volume of air bubble shouldn't be increased than more than 5%, because it's reduced the compressive strength. And you can see it here, it's mentioned that air entraining admixture reduce the compressive strength of concrete. So if you look at the red circle are air entrained bubble, and this one is the capillary pores. So you can see that we have a water in the pores, and after reducing the temperature, this blue one wants to increase the volume. And if we add already the bubble to the concrete, then there is a place around each pores, and the volume, the increased volume, increased water could go through the bubble we add to the concrete. And this help us to reduce the tensile stress and also avoid the crack in the concrete matrix. So this is the concept of adding the bubble in the concrete matrix. So it's like an extra place, extra room for expanded volume. So the other deterioration is overloading. It's a physical problem for the concrete structures. We designed the structure for a specific load, and during the using the structure, maybe we have more load or excessive load. And if it's the early loading, then the effect will lead to some micro crack, which leads to increasing the deflection, and also we will have some flexural and shear crack. If I want to show you the different type of the crack, they told me maybe better to use this part of the board because they can record it. If we have a beam, probably many of you familiar with this, we will have two different type of the crack. Some after applying the load, some crack which is bending or flexural crack is are in the middle of the beam, and there are some other crack near the support, especially which is the screw crack, and we told them it's the shear crack. So overloading could increase the support reaction, and this increasing the support reaction could create the cracked near support, and could also be could have a bigger and wider crack even in the middle or shear crack near the support. Abrasion is another physical problem for the concrete. If concrete is repeatedly struck by particle from a harder element, then abrasion will take place in the structures. Then the main reason of the abrasion is the friction, because hardened body and the softer body due to the friction could create some damage on the surface. Some factor which influence on the abrasion and could change the resistance of the concrete could be compressive strength, properties of the aggregate, and condition of the surface. So we would like to have a much more strength concrete, and also we prefer to have a stronger aggregate to could resist the loads, and especially in the surface, we would like to have a stronger aggregate. The other problem is leaching. Leaching is dissolution and leaching of calcium hydroxide from the hardened cement paste in the concrete. We have a dissolved ions like Ca, calcium, and which they are trying to leach out and come to the surface of the concrete. And there is no structural damage for good quality of the concrete when we have a leaching problem. But in the surface of the concrete, we have a white material, and then it could be due to the leaching. A white layer of insoluble limestone on the concrete surface is the sign of this type of the problem. The chemical reaction is mentioned here, and then in the surface we have a calcium carbonate or limestone. If you look at this picture, in the next slide you can see that we have a this type of the surface in the concrete, and it could be due to the insoluble limestone which comes on the surface of the concrete. Alkali silica reactions, or ASR. Aggregate containing certain form of the silica, and then they react with alkali in the concrete, usually in the cement paste. And then, by existing the OH, they started to produce the material, and this material would like to increase the volume. And then we have an internal crack in the concrete, which come to the surface of the concrete. ASR is a big problem also in Norway, because recently, in maybe 20 or 30 recent years, they understand that there is this kind of problem in the concrete. And the majority of the bridge in the Norway already designed in 1950, 1940, 1960. And they understand they have a problem of ASR, and they have to control and do some things to control the ASR problem. Because ASR is not quick reaction. It takes several years, maybe around 20 years, 30 years. So it's very slow, but and hidden reactions. And after the crack appeared, and then you understand, okay, there's a problem in the concrete, but it's too late. So there are some suggestions to control the ASR. One of them is to control the aggregate, the amount of the silica in the aggregate, especially in the aggregate. Some aggregate have a potential of the react, so we have to control the aggregate before making the bridge or making the concrete structures. Silica on the surface of the aggregate dissolve and react with alkali in the porous solutions, and then we have alkali silica gel, and with moisture, with OH, then we have an expanded material which create several crack in the structure. And you can see in this structure we have a several crack due to the ASR. And if we are going to speak about the crack pattern due to the ASR problem, usually when we have ASR problem, Crack would like to follow the reinforcement. And along the reinforcement, if we have a grid of the reinforcement in horizontal or vertical, we will have a kind of crack map in the structures. So it would be something like this type of the crack. They follow the horizontal and vertical reinforcements. So this type of the crack also we have it when we have a drying shrinkage and we have a plastic cracking. But the difference is crack due to the shrinkage appear very in the first days after making the concrete, after curing. But cracking due to the ASR appeared after 5 to 10 or 20 years. So by time, by comparing the time, we could understand which crack is related to which problem. So, which factor influencing on ASR? The first one is the high content of alkali. And then it's suggested that to reduce the alkaline less than 3 kilograms per square meters. And also, the large amount of the reactive aggregate. We have to control the aggregate before using this in the concrete. And usually when we have an aggregate, the aggregate put on the specific place, and sometimes there's a silica in the surface of the soil, and then it's contact with the aggregate and increase the change the aggregate to the reactive aggregate. So we should be careful about the location that we depot the aggregate. And also we have a moist environment, the relative humidity, because for this ASR reaction, if we come back to the reaction, we can see that we need the moisture, and then the moisture is a important factor, and then we have to the other factor which influences to the ASR reaction is moisture. So, but the question is how we can prevent the ASR. And how we can predict the behavior of the structure when we have an ASR. About the preventing the ASR, the first one is the using the cement with low alkali content. There is a code and there is a suggestion for that. And also, we do not use the large amount of the admixture with high alkali content. And if possible, reduce the content of reactive aggregate, or at least replace the reactive aggregate, which aggregate is not reactive. But these three suggested to control and prevent the ASR. But there is a new question for existing structure, because as I said, there are several concrete structures in Norway that and other countries that they are suffering from the ASR problem. So the question is how we should predict the residual behavior of the structure. If I have a bridge, and if I know there is an ASR problem in this bridge, what should I do and how should I understand the when I should repair or destroy this bridge? So it's a big question, and there is no clear answer for this question. Because the ASR, the effect of the ASR, I will speak about this tomorrow, but the effect of the ASR is very complicated. We have an expansion, but expansion in each direction is different. So in one direction it could be higher and other direction is... So we cannot predict the percentage of the expansion, and then we cannot simulate it on the finite element software. So we have to do some simplification. And there are some ongoing projects. For example, two PhD students in NTNU, Trondheim, started to work on that. Sorry, one PhD student started to work on simulating the ASR. And there are some other experimental study about the ASR, a really good experimental study about the ASR in NTNU. You can find the document. It's a part of the COIN. And you can find the report and read about the ASR problem in Norway. So anyway, tomorrow I will speak about the structural effect of the ASR and how and why it's complicated, and which simplification we need if we want to predict the capacity of the structures.
What is the Nobet coin? I didn't understand. Shall I write it in the Google? And
the coin?
Yeah.
The coin is a part of the SINTEF. SINTEF is a research group, and the coin is a smaller research group, specifically on the concrete. I think it's a concrete innovation.
Okay.
Yeah. If you search it and then just search COIN and ASR, then you can find the report. Really nice report you will find. And it started from 2007 to 2014, 7 years research on the concrete problems in different directions. One direction is ASR, the other direction is corrosion and other problems. Yeah. In the aggregate, if I show you here, some of the aggregate containing some silica is IO2. So when we have a high silica in the cement paste and in the concrete, and also when the concrete contain Na plus K potassium and sodium, and then there's a potential of reacting to each other. This kind of aggregate, which contain a lots amount of the silica, named reactive aggregate. So they have a potential of react with in the concrete with alkalis, and then we need also the moisture, OH. So
if it's if you have silicium, if you say is I guess 40%,
mm-hmm.
you get more than 40, so it will go wrong.
Yeah, if you have a high amount of this,
always have to have less alkalis than silicis.
Yes, you should control the amount of the silicis in the concrete. The main reason could be in aggregate, but you could have also in the cement and in the other, for example, in the admixture as well. So you should control the amount of the silicis in the concrete, and then you. At that point, you can say, okay, I can prevent the ASR problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's start with the sulfate. Sulfate, for example, if I start, we speak about the soil. In the soil, probably we have some sulfate. And the sulfate could come, because many of the structure are in contact with the soil, and sulfate could come from the groundwater through the structure, concrete structures. And there is some chemical reactions which leads to spalling in the concrete. The source of the sulfate also could be industrial wastewater and some other things which at the end leads to crack and spalling of the surface of the concrete. And when we speak about the water could contain the sulfate, penetrate to the concrete, and the sulfate react with the calcium hydroxide and hydrated C3A in the concrete. And then they increase the volume of the concrete and of the especially ettringite cement paste in the concrete. And then we have a problem in the surface of the concrete, like spalling and crack, as I said. And we should know that the rate of the sulfate attack increase with the amount of the sulfate solution in the concrete. And then when we have a high WC ratio due to the moisture and due to the existing of the water, we could have a higher sulfate and higher damage of the sulfate. So let's go through the one of the most important problem in the concrete structures, corrosion. We have two type of the corrosion in the concrete structures, the chloride corrosion and carbonation corrosion. Corrosion due to the carbonation. So when we speak about the chloride, there is a color go through the concrete and reach the rebar. And in the rebar, we have a anode and cathode. And for anode, we have some reaction. For cathode, we have another reaction. And the combination of the anode and cathode in the rebar leads to having the rust around the rebar. And in some part, we reduce the cross section. I will show you. So what's the anode and what's the cathode? The reaction which leads to having the dissolved iron and also release the electrons in some part of the concrete, it's named anode. And there is another reaction when we have a oxygen and when we have a water, and also we have a released electrons, they react with each other and we have a hydroxide. And this anodic reaction, and this cathodic reaction, if algebraic we sum to each other, we have this long reaction, which is leads to this material. This material is the rust, which we have it here in the surface of the concrete. And this reaction named corrosion reaction due to the chloride. So in some part of the rebar, we have a Fe2+, and also we release the electrons. And this go in this part, which is the cathode, react with the water and oxygen and release the OH. Fe2 plus OH, we have FeOH2, which is the dust around the rebar. And in this part, we have a localized corrosion, reducing the cross section. This reducing in the cross section leads to reducing the capacity of the rebar. And this volume here leads to creating the crack on the concrete. So when we speak about the chloride corrosion, we have two main consequence effect. One of them is the cross-section reduction, and the other is cracking in the concrete. In addition, this type of the corrosion removed and injured the bond slip between the bond between the rebar and concrete. So the friction between the rebar and concrete reduced and injured, and we cannot say that the rebar is embedded in the concrete, fully attached to the concrete, because we have some new material around the rebar which creates some crack in the concrete. In this graph, we can say that the level of the deterioration, usually when we speak about the corrosion, we could say that the corrosion could be divided in two different time. The first time is the initiation period, and the other is a propagation period. In the initiation period, there is no sign in the concrete, because internally chloride go through the concrete and we don't know anything. Nothing's happened so far. And then concrete start to reach the rebar and the passivation of the reinforcement start to react with the reinforcement. And from this point, we could say that this is a propagation period. It's the start of the corrosion. So, after the passivation, we have some crack, And then it's time we can see, okay, we have some problem in this structure. But you can see it's here, and then we need to understand and control it earlier. The way of the controlling is doing some monitoring, some test on the structures. And then after having the crack, we have a spalling and then collapse of the structures. So the passivation happens here during the time when we have a moisture around the rebar, because we have some layer around the rebar, and when we have oxygen and moisture, it start to injure that bicolorite. So just know in your mind that when we speak about the deterioration due to the chloride corrosion, we have two different level, initiation and propagation. And propagation is much more important for us when we are going to predict the capacity of the structure, because we can see the structural effect. We can see the crack, we can see the spalling of the concrete. So I told you that when we speak about the corrosion, we have a cross-section reduction. We reduce the cross-section of the rebar. Usually, we assume that this cross-section is uniform cross-section, is completely identical around the rebar. But it's not a true assumption, especially when we speak about the chloride corrosion. In carbonation, it could be correct because there is no concentration of the chloride when we speak about the carbonation. So we can say that the cross-section reduction is uniform. But in the chloride, it's not correct. And we cannot say that the cross-section uniformly reduced. If we look at the this type of the corrosion, this is a localized corrosion, you can see it could be around 60%, 70% cross-section in one point, and the other part of the rebar could be undamaged. So this is due to the chloride corrosion. It's happened in the structure. And we name this point, this small point here, name it pit or localized corrosion. So sometimes we say that a pitting corrosion, it means that localized cross-section reduction due to the chloride attack. And if we have this type of the cross-section reduction, then probably the rebar in the structure will fail from this point. And it's changed the location of the hinges on the structures. If I like to have it in this shape, if I like to rebar fail in the middle, but if I have a pit at this zone, then probably the rebar will fail here and influence on the failure of the structure. And here you can see this is an interesting graph from the real corroded rebar. You can see when we speak about the real corroded rebar, this is the length of the rebar, and this is the percentage of the cross-section loose. It's completely non-uniform. So in different lengths, the percentage could be different. So uniform assumption, when we speak about the corrosion, uniform reducing the cross-section is not correct. It's very important to consider the pitting corrosion in our calculation. So tomorrow I will speak more about the chloride corrosion and what is the effect of the chloride corrosion. Let's finish the deterioration process in the concrete by carbonation. What is the carbonation? Carbonation is the type of the deterioration in the concrete when carbon dioxide in the air react with calcium hydroxide in the concrete. And for carbonation, it's very important that we should have a moisture in the concrete. If we look at this graph here is the relative humidity, the moisture condition, and here is the speed of the carbon penetration to the concrete. You can see if the moisture is low, between the 0 to 20, there is no penetration of the carbonation. So we need the moisture to go through that. And the maximum carbonation speed happened in between 16 to 18. And if we have a fully saturated concrete, for example, under the water, then the carbonation cannot go through the concrete and reach the rebar, and then we have a corrosion in the rebar. So the moisture is very, very important parameters in the carbonation. And the process of the carbonation leads to alkalinity in the concrete. So, and these parameters will help us to understand we have a carbonate in the concrete or not. Because if we have a carbonate in the concrete, then the alkalinity in the concrete is alkaline material. I will speak it here. It's a matter of the pH. So if we have a sound concrete, without not carbonated concrete, the pH is 13 to 14. But when I say that it's an alkaline material, carbonated concrete reduces the pH. And when we reduce the pH, it means that the material is alkaline. So one of the way to control the concrete against carbonation is control the pH or alkalinity in the concrete. And in this graph, in this shape, you can see that we can use the phenolphthalein to control the to understand that the pH is less than 9 or higher than 9. And then if it's less than 9, it means that we have a carbonated concrete. And it's not based on the color, we could understand that this concrete is already carbonated. So I can show you in the clip here, and then you can see the test. It's a very short clip, I think. In the middle cross section of the concrete.
Is it dry or?
Yeah.
And you can see it's going to be purple in some parts. And then it means that there is no carbonation on that. So. So tomorrow, so far we understand the mechanism of the deterioration process in the concrete. Not very deep, at least in somehow it's necessary to know. And then tomorrow I'm going to go through the structural effect and how we can predict the capacity of the structures. Then for the structural effect, I speak individually for each of them. And at the end, I will show you the way of assessment of residual capacity of the structure, which will give you a good overview of the current knowledge in this area. Any question?
Yes, but I will ask you.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much.